I have, well, first of all, I followed what we were supposed to talk about today, the future of the ADA. So I have a little bit of a game show that I'm going to follow. 25 A's in the Americans with Disabilities Act, focusing on the word Americans. I know it's not just for Americans, it's for non-citizens as well. See if you can keep up with me with the A's. The first is arithmetic, or demographics. By 2100, we'll be up to about 10 billion people from 7 billion people. Most of these people will be in Asia and Africa, in developing countries with rising poverty throughout the world. Interestingly, the major developed nation that's expected to have the most significant increase in population is the United States, not Japan, Germany, China, Russia. As a matter of fact, they're declining. This ties with aging and disability. In 20 years, our population will double. There is a lack right now in our field, which some of us are working on understanding the implications of a merger of conceptions of civil rights in the aging, older adults, and disability area, as Anita has talked about. This does raise issues in Article 19 of the CRPA, and you'll hear about that from my great partner, Tina Campanella, on a new project we're doing on supported decision-making, funded by the administration on community living. Some populations of note, which I am dealing more and more with, are individuals who have autism, and individuals with ADD, ADHD. I can't tell you how many students at Syracuse University and elsewhere we're beginning to see, thankfully, from more diverse populations. We have just gotten with our partner, the Onondaga Community College, a fairly large grant from the Office of Disability Employment Policy and U.S. Department of Labor to look at what are pathways to employment for these new populations. Another cohort, armed forces, 1 million veterans, 600,000, 650 now, 1,000 being treated in the VA. The costs expected to go up to $1 trillion and it's the fourth largest category of government spending. The signature injury, of course, is traumatic brain injury, PTSD, and this is an area which, of course, is terrific importance to our country. Next clump, abode, where we live, and I'll call this first one Asylum One. If you all read the very insightful piece by the Ivy League professors at the University of Pennsylvania about how we should bring back asylums in this country because the deinstitutionalization movement has failed, well, I would argue that, and I'm only one person, none of them has been a court officer like me or others in this room and has seen the difference between institutionalization and living in the community. Asylum number two, i.e., aka prisons. And in this regard, I'm so happy to see Maria Morris in the room. I'm working with her to be determined yet in Alabama to help understand, as Michael Bean and others has done in this room, the terrific conditions in these institutions in which people with disabilities are being stepped on, as in third world nations. People who are blind and deaf cannot go into work release programs because they cannot accommodate their disabilities and therefore stay in prison longer or have worse disciplinary issues. Asylum 2A from this week, and the word is arrest. If you've listened to the oral argument in the Sheehan case, City of San Francisco v. Sheehan, it was a wild ride with regard to ADA Title II and whether or not essentially arrests are required to consider accommodation issues under the ADA. They're talking about flipping around the whole burdens, you know, not dealing with accommodations first and then dealing with direct threat. Here's my next A, Alito, Justice Alito. If you've listened to his comments at oral argument, you wonder if he even understands that there is discrimination defined in Title II of the ADA. And some of us would think that Justice Alito is an A. Are you transcribing this? fill in the A as you like. Avocation A. Well, I wrote a book last year, 2014, called Equality, The Struggle for Web Accessibility for Persons with Disabilities. And thanks to Dan Goldstein and Mark Maurer and so many others, it's already out of date. If you've read the Scrib decision this week, which was extraordinary, which included coverage of apps, then you understand now how they have a strategy with Larry Paradis and others to pick off the circuits one at a time. So you got the first circuit, you're working on the second, and you got a very nice decision in the second. The ninth is kind of an anomaly because you got that nexus requirement, but I am hard at work on revising my book because I can't keep up with many of these stellar lawyers in this room. Which of course leads to another A, accommodations, which was mentioned. There are still terrific myths about the costs and burdens of accommodations. I was fortunate very early on in the ADA to do a study with Sears Roebuck, which tried to debunk the myths of costs of accommodations. We still see those today. Next A going forward, and by the way, next year we'll have A26 to 50 for the next part of the ADA, is the Affordable Health Care Act. If some of you looked at the paper this week, there is a brilliant bill that was had a hearing on that's being introduced into the Congress called the Preserving Employee Wellness Programs Act. Has anybody heard of that? Well, basically, under the Affordable Health Care Act, there can be financial incentives if people participate in wellness programs. Of course, that can be discriminatory, depending upon how you define wellness and what the state of your health or disability is. And under this proposed bill, they want to provide those incentives without consideration of disability and have the Congress stamp it that it doesn't violate the ADA or GINA. So if the Affordable Health Care Act is intact, this is an issue which we should all pay attention to. Next A, acid, not what you're thinking, deoxyribonucleic acid, which is what? DNA, of course, and is another area that we have to look forward to in terms of GINA going forward, as I just mentioned. Okay, I'm moving forward to my next A. Amendments. Well, we talked about one already. There's this ongoing myth about the so-called abusive ADA litigants who are driving all the cities and counties crazy because somehow they think they didn't have enough notice of 25 years that they should have been making the cities accessible or the buildings accessible. I see it every day. I get calls from builders once a month saying, do we really have to spend money on this? We don't see any people with disabilities. Why do we need to have people with disabilities have a ramp to get into our leasing office? Can't they just, you know, call us up or something? So Sam Bagenstos, I don't know if he's here, and others have written on this. Of course, in California State, Larry Paradis knows you have a brilliant movement to curb so-called abusive ADA litigators. You have the list that's posted on the web of the most litigious lawyers, and you have new forms for demand letters, right, Larry, that you have to send with regard to basically giving up your case ahead of time and so forth because somehow the legislature, including Dianne Feinstein, thinks that the ADA has been abusively used. Next one, which is, and I only have a couple more and then I'm gonna stop because we want your questions, is really the biggest one for me in many ways, and it is attitudes, A with a capital A. Anita talked about this, Fred talked about this, which of course leads to advocacy, and I see we have in the room somewhere our Assistant Attorney General, Ms. Eve Hill. I don't know where she is, but I always give her an applause. There she is. Thank you, Assistant Attorney General. What's that? deputy, sorry, but it didn't, I elevated you. I elevated you because I need that A in my, in my, yeah, we all would vote for you. I have to say that I think the first case that I was an expert in was Chuck E. Cheese and Don Perkel, which some of you remember. Paul Miller asked me to do that. It was an extraordinary case. The most recent case was with Quality Trust, with Jenny Hatch. And the cases are the same. I mean, it's all about, as Fred and others had said, Anita, Chris, it's really about misplaced attitudes. And I'm sad to say that there's still so many cases that are just based on that. As Chris was saying, I'm working in the prisons quite heavily now, and they are so far behind on so many dimensions, let alone international awareness. Let's start with national or domestic awareness. But and I would end, Dr. Maurer, that's why I'm being quick, because I want questions, with my last couple of A's. And one is the optimist that I am, the angels of our nature. And I'm particularly like Angel Clarence Oddbody. Does anybody know who Angel Clarence Oddbody is?
How did you miss it?
From what?
Frank Capra.
Frank Capra. It's a Wonderful Life. And I have spoken, and I will speak again, actually in a serious empirical way, because this is kind of a social science approach, what our world would be like without the Americans with Disabilities Act at 25, and what it would be like from 26 to 25. Well, it would be like Pottersville. For those of you that know, It's a Wonderful Life. It would be Pottersville, it would be dark, it would be non-inclusive, it would be worse attitudes than we have now. And the work that I'm working on now, trying to understand conceptually in a somewhat serious, straight-faced, empirical way, is also trying to understand the implications of what would have happened had we not had an ADA. Because we're fighting these economists and all these others who are saying the ADA suppresses employment levels, which has totally been debunked, and that it creates burdens for employers and it's abusive litigates. And there really is no empirical support for that. I had a debate with Walter Olson one time on the ADA several years ago, and he said the ADA is going to put businesses out of business. I said, Walter, name two that you know of. Name one. He didn't know of any. But that's his Cato shtick. So I have to end, since it's the 150th anniversary of Abraham Lincoln and everything that's going on an optimistic note with regard to angels. And I will tell you what you probably already know, what he said in his first inaugural address on March 4th, this month in 1861. He said, "We are not enemies." You can fill in who the we are. "But friends, and we must not be enemies. Though passion may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection. The mystic chords of memory will swell when again touched, as surely they will be, by the better angels of our nature." Thank you very much. I look forward to your comments.